This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian Country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
I'm
happened.
A member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Uju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan, Guabagani Gadikag and Ujjaba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There was trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We're here, we'll stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere. We're great.
Hey, Kutagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade Hingadena.
Wow, Wendy, we're really excited to have Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan on.
Yes, we are. Thanks so much for being here with us, Peggy.
Yeah, what do you have to say, Peggy? I know we're coming up on the census and it's so, so important.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. I am a census nerd, and so I always love the opportunity to talk about the census. The 2020 census is still happening, but time is running short. The count ends on September 30th, which is why we are pushing folks to make sure that they are filling out their census this month to get it done. We need every tribal citizen, every Native person across the state of Minnesota to respond now and to count everyone. So I'm really glad to be able to talk to you today because it is urgent and we need to be counted.
Well, not only do we need to be counted, but I mean, we get to pick our, we get to keep congresspeople, we get to get school funding, we get all these things and we need to be counted.
That's right. And so, you know, when you fill out the census, it's roughly $2,800 that is attached to each individual who fills out the census per year, and that's with the kind of investment that we get from the federal government. So that means, you know, over the course of 10 years, that's up to $30,000. And so, you know, that pays for things like community centers, schools, like you mentioned, hospitals, roads, infrastructure, all the things that, you know, we need to keep our community strong. And of course, you know, it's also how it determines how many congressional members we have. Minnesota is at risk of losing a congressional seat. And I can tell you that right now, I think we need more representation in Washington, and that risk of losing that representation and that voice is real. Minnesota was number one in filling out the census for several months. Unfortunately, we have slipped to 11th. And I don't know about you, but as a Minnesotan, like, I am not coming in 11th place.
No,
so,
no
you know, yeah, it's super important that we get counted. And for Native people specifically, I think, you know, too often we are invisible. And this is one of the ways that we can ensure that people know we are still here. We deserve to be counted. We deserve investment. And this is for our little ones all the way up to our elders. Everyone needs to be counted. And I think of filling out my census form. I filled it out with my daughter, right? And we talked about it and what it was. I think filling out your census form is an act of resilience and an act of resistance. So saying, you have to see us. And, you know, that's why I really want folks to do this and take this seriously because, you know, our people deserve to be seen and heard and valued.
That's right. And it's our tradition too, because it's really kind of exciting for me to be able to look at the old censuses and see my great, great, great Choka grandfather and then kind of figure out who's one of the children. I mean, it's history. It's our history.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I think that's an important reminder for folks. It's, you know, it's how we just remember who we are and also look towards the future and how we're investing in future generations. That's what this is all about.
Peggy, if we're talking with someone who said maybe they didn't get their census in the mail, is there a website that they can go on or go online to do this other way than just mailing?
Yeah, for sure. So I don't know about you, but I don't always keep track of everything that comes in the mail. So, you know, it's really easy. There's two things that you can do. You can either go to 2020census.gov, or you can just Google, use the Google and look up census, or you can call 844-330-2020, and just, you know, you can fill it out online, you can do it over the phone. It just takes a few minutes, it's fast and it's easy. And it's one of the ways, you know, we're starting to hear that there are census takers who are now going door to door to check in with folks who haven't followed, you know, filled out their census yet. And the best way to get someone to not come to your home is to fill out your census.
You've read our minds.
That's great. If you don't want people knocking on your door, fill out your census. No, that's great.
That's right.
That should be a t-shirt. Jeez. So, you know, we have 11 nations in Minnesota, Native nations, and we all need to really help our relatives realize that they need to sign up. And what can we say to kind of squish their fears about, you know, maybe colonizing and things like that? I mean, we've talked a little bit about funding. I mean, and it's there's other things too, that we're not using this information against you or anything like that.
That's right. This is entirely confidential. And so the information that you share, the only folks who have access to that are like the people who work with the census. That's it. And that information is protected years and years and years and years into the future. So this is totally confidential. And really, you know, I would say for folks who are worried about it, and who, you know, or may feel like this is a tool of colonization, not being counted is a tool of colonization. I think
right.
that, you know, frankly, the federal government depends on us not being engaged and involved. And, you know, this is just one way. And it's how, you know, we know that the federal government also needs to uphold their trust responsibilities and treaty rights.
Right.
They have to know that we're still here and we still exist. And those are the things that I think it's just important to remember. It may not be the tool that we would use as Native people, but it is the tool that is available to us to ensure that the federal government holds up their end of the bargain and their commitments, being counted as part of that process.
Absolutely. I think that's the main thing.
Really
that's
good information. And you know what, Peggy? I think it's so important for people to hear it from you, because people trust you. So thank you so much for being on, and for, you know, letting people know that it's okay to fill out the census and all the important reasons for doing so.
Right.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show and spending some time, and really, like Wendy said, to let everybody listen to our shows about how important it is, and just remind everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Hey, welcome, Wendy. We have somebody on the line here. We want to really see what's going on with the Wall of Forgotten Natives in Minneapolis. And who do I have on the line right now?
This is Jenny Bjorgo and Jace Rowe.
Hey, you guys, can you fill our audience in what's been happening today? I've been watching some Facebook live feeds, and can you tell our audience what's been going on?
Okay, so me and Jenny, we work closely with our relatives that are experiencing homelessness. And today they were asked to leave a camp that they had set up and that they were living in. And they were told that they had to leave today. So a lot of community members hopped into action and showed up with vans, with bags, with supplies, and asked people where they wanted to go. And a majority of people, the decision was made that people wanted to go back to the wall of Forgotten Natives, where everybody was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we started loading people up, and people were setting up tents. We had about 20 tents set up, and then the State Patrol came, and they did a walkthrough and were very intimidating to the campers. Obviously, there is some history there, so a lot of people scattered. And Jenny was asking what was going on. They were saying that everybody had to leave. Jenny said that there is a order from the governor that says if there's more than 10 tents set up, it is considered an encampment and people do not have to leave. Also that this is Native land and that we were there to reclaim the end the COVID. Where are people supposed to go? That was what we were saying. So we were held in the area where the wall is. Me, Jenny, a couple other people that work for other agencies and community members, and we stood our ground and we told them that we were not going to leave and that we were holding the space for our relatives that are experiencing homelessness. And where else are people supposed to go? Every other place, every other park is within a school. And so there's no place for our people to go. And so they should be staying in South Minneapolis, and this is the area that they're used to. This is the area where they have connection to their family, to their relatives, and also to service providers in the area that can provide Native-specific services, which are proven to work the best. So we need to keep them in this area. So this isn't a permanent solution. This is until we can get people some services. We can get them indoors because we all know it's going to be getting cold soon. Our biggest concern right now is security and just making sure it's safe for our women and for our relatives there. So we're working on that. We're also working with other people, and we're bringing a hot meal to our relatives. We've been handing out masks. We've been handing out hand sanitizers. We've been handing out water, just supplies. So we're encouraging people, service providers, to help if they can and come down and lend a hand. And that's kind of where we're at right now.
So can we, like Wendy and I, come down there and bring stuff? And what would you need that the public could come out and support you with? What supplies?
A lot of them came with a lot of supplies. They have supplies. We had Southside and Harm Reduction come in with some harm reduction supplies, some sleeping bags. Everybody has tents, and probably we just need services. We need service providers. We need to offer the people services.
Yep.
And like people bringing a bunch of stuff. Last time that was just too much garbage, too much stuff.
Right.
And it turned out to be more of a problem than anything. And, you know, we're not looking for long-term staying here because it's going to be cold. We just want to be able to provide people services and get them services however that looks.
Yep.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that you got your word out there. And I really, really want to say Pini Gigi to you for taking care of our relatives. It's a huge deal, and I know you guys are boots on the ground, and I just wanted to get your truth out there on the radio. Thank you so much for stopping by, and also thank you so, so much for what you two are doing for our people.
No, thank you. Thank you for the support. Thank you for the support. That means the most. When we get community support, that's what means the most to us. So we're out here for community, and that's why we're here. So thank you.
Pini Gigi, thank you for being on. So, wow, Wendy, that was Jace Rowe and Jenny. I didn't catch Jenny's last name.
Yeah, it's really sad that these poor homeless people have to keep moving around, and they keep getting uprooted and having to move, and they're not welcome anywhere. And I'm not sure I got what he said about the governor wrote if there's more than 10 tents, then it's
an encampment,
and then they can stay there. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
Okay,
but I don't know. What did you hear, Patrick?
Because
that was
more than 10 tents.
Yeah, I didn't quite catch that
and
too.
I should have asked, but Well, hopefully they will be able to get service providers to go there and to help people with whatever they need. Mostly they need a home. So even if it's temporary housing, to get them from one point to another until they get into stable housing. The weather's going to change quick here. We all know that. I mean, it's September 2nd. In a month, it's going to be cold.
That's right. And again, you know, there's services out there, and I know those two work for a service. So it's really important not to load up your truck with stuff that you want to get rid of and bring it out there. Like they said, the last time it got a little out of hand, people... Mm-hmm.
Well, it's great. People wanted to bring stuff, but it just got too much. So.
Well, and maybe the wrong stuff.
Yeah,
too.
Maybe the wrong stuff. Exactly. Yeah.
I thought what was said was if it was more than 10, they can't be there, which I think would make more sense.
Okay. Then it's more, they can't be there. There's more than 10, then it's
an encampment,
it's
and
encamp-
they can't
and
be
they
there.
They can't be there. Okay.
I think that's maybe more the right thing, but I think he did said can be there accidentally, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, okay. Well, we'll have to clear that up.
Thanks for that, Patrick. It was a little delay, but thanks, Patrick. Cool. So why don't we take a quick break here, Wendy? You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. You know, it's with deep heart, heavy heart, that I have to reach out to my brother, Robert Lilligren, who is the chair of the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors. And we want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the unsheltered Native people returning to the Wall of Forgotten Natives. Welcome, Robert.
Yeah, bonjour. Thanks for having me here.
You know, there's, you know, as many times as we go around the sun, things do not seem to change. And I was talking to you earlier before we came on. I can't believe, I thought it was still 2019 that we were dealing with this, but it was 2 years ago that we were on the Wall of Forgotten Natives.
Yeah, it was 2018 during the summer that the encampment at Franklin Hiawatha grew amazingly, exponentially into one of the largest unsheltered homeless encampments we've seen in the city and in the state, and the community named it the Wall of Forgotten Natives. And as of yesterday, we're kind of back where we were 2 years ago.
Yeah, how can that be? Because we were on our other show and we saw this going on, and we reached out to Jace and I believe Jenny to come in and tell us what the heck was going on. But they were moving people back to the wall because they've been kicked out of another place in our land.
That's it, exactly, our own land. And Jason, Jenny, and other Native outreach people, this whole sort of cadre of Native outreach folks that have grown up since the Wall of Forgotten Natives in 2018, and they were instrumental in kind of sounding the alarm and raising awareness and shifting our relatives. And many of the campers who moved to the wall yesterday were actually from an encampment on city-owned property just a few blocks away. The encampment was unsafe, unclean, unmanaged. It was having huge negative impact. It was right in the middle of a residential area, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And the city was just not being a good neighbor and not taking care of their own property. And the community came forward and said, we need this encampment moved, and we want to see that people are offered alternative housing, supportive services, that they have a place to go. And instead, the city just cleared the encampment and folks had nowhere to go. And so the decision was made to reoccupy the Wall of Forgotten Natives, which has been fenced in since the encampment closed. So they opened the fences and started moving folks in.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the city government, from the press release that I have, I really like this. Mm-hmm. The city government has kind of been using our relatives as a hot potato.
You know, it's not just city there. That's every unit of government. And it's been very frustrating for us who are more on the ground to see if an encampment springs up on park board property, then the park board stands alone and all the other jurisdictions point their fingers and say, fix this, it's your job. If it's on Met Council or Met Transit property, then everyone steps back and Met Council's on their own. If it's on MnDOT property, everybody steps back. If it's on city property, everybody steps back. And so we're not getting the opportunities to really leverage the incredible collaborative model that we've been building right at the Native community level. And instead, each new encampment is like starting over.
So we see a lot of the same faces from our relatives that are in these encampments and in crisis. And I know you're really good friends, and I am with Mike Gozzi and the work that they do. They know these people by first name and have been helping them for years.
Yeah, so Mike Gozzi, who's the CEO of the American Indian Community Development Corporation, or AICDC, and these guys he and his staff have been doing incredible work, incredible heavy lifting at all levels, really. You know, they've at the ground level, they're outreach people like Autumn Dilley and Travis Earthwarner, they, along with Jason Jenny from Minnesota Indians Resource Center, St. Stephen's has Native outreach folks. They've been working in this collaborative way. They've been showing how our government agencies, our non-Native service providers can work more collaboratively. They've been doing it. And Mike Gozzi himself can bring shelter beds and supportive housing units online faster than any developer I have ever seen. And I've seen a lot of them in my time. Mm-hmm. And so we're showing, we're figuring this out. We're innovating right at the community level and trying to get the system, the city, the county, the state, to all kind of pay attention and to support our work. And that's kind of where we've reached a dead end. They act like you said, Robert, a hot potato, where they, if it's not on their land, it's not their responsibility, and they just toss the responsibility and accountability away.
Well, you mentioned a lot of names of people that are boots on the ground, and I think we also need our relatives that have boots on the ground to get some respect from these people that quote-unquote make decisions for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's another thing that we really saw with as a result of the Wall of Forgotten Natives in 2018, is there was a systemic awareness that there are particular Native issues to unsheltered homelessness. And we got data, which was very helpful. And we learned really tragic things, like in our region here in the Twin Cities, the Seven County metro area, a Native person is 17 times more likely to be unsheltered than the broader community. Mm-hmm. Other populations are overrepresented. African Americans are 5 times more likely. But that's 17 times more likely. And truthfully, it's worse now since COVID and the civil unrest following George Floyd's murder. And so the fact that there's very particular things that contribute to Native people sleeping outside or living in places that are unfit for human habitation. And they're systemic. They're deliberate. You know, housing instability was a deliberate strategy of colonization. And so we're still living with that today and trying to get the system to respond. And so now people like Mike Gozzi or people like Autumn Dilley, who chairs Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors Housing Community and does outreach, people like me, we have places at the table within the system to build reform. But systemic change is hard. The status quo resists change, and we still have relatives that are sleeping outside, and winter is on its way.
So a lot of this has been put on the back burner, out of sight, out of mind. I think that some of the people talk a good game, and then they go on to something else, and the dust settles. Mm-hmm. It's not on the news anymore, and then they move on. So This has been happening all summer with a lot of different things in different places. But again, we watching the news don't know that 17% of these people that are in camps, or not 17%, but
17 times
the people are in camp that are Native American, and we don't hear that stuff. So the dust settles, and it's just these homeless people that can't get their poop in a group.
Right. Well, we don't hear that stuff. And then it's kind of this, the sort of broader community is like, well, what's wrong with those Natives? Why, you know, there are shelter beds available. Why don't they move into them? Well, obviously, if available shelter beds were the solution, we wouldn't have people sleeping outside.
Right.
But Natives do not feel welcome. They do not feel served in our existing shelter system. And then when these camps pop up, you all of a sudden hear from all of the governmental jurisdictions, well, we don't do that. That's not our job to deal with this. And the problem is it's nobody's job to deal with this. And so we need to build a system that's people-centered, that acknowledges the cultural differences and cultural specificity that we need to bring solutions forward. And I actually heard it today, you know, after we had this great community event and press conference to raise awareness. I was in a meeting with a lot of state, county, city officials, and I heard that line, you know, well, this isn't really what we do. And I just about exploded. If I hear that one more time, I am going to explode. I think none of us do this. So let's step into new space and figure out a better way to support our relatives who sleep outside.
Exactly. And I really, you know, people get things stolen from them in these places.
Oh,
they don't
yeah.
feel safe. Some people mm-hmm. are still using in the depths of addiction. Mm-hmm. There's all these things that are helping us. Well, you know, I really like Mike Gozzi's shirts that say that we weren't homeless until 1492. And,
right.
And there's a lot to that, right?
That is exactly right. And there were scores of people wearing them today at the community event and press conference. And people who are unsheltered for reasons. It may have to do with mental health. It may have to do with chemical use. But they become very vulnerable when they're in these camps. And they're vulnerable to becoming addicts if they weren't before. There are women and men
right.
and girls and boys are vulnerable to be commercially sexually exploited. And so people who prey on vulnerable people know that. And so these become magnets for people who are looking to recruit people into commercial sex trafficking, into lives of addiction. They're very dangerous places for our relatives to be.
Exactly. One thing I want to bring up, too, that we talked about with Jace a little bit before we get going, and then I want to get back
yeah.
into that, is one of the things, too, we're not pleading for people to bring stuff. I think the places that are working with the homeless really have a system and things going on. We don't need people coming to the wall of Forgotten Natives and dropping off dirty clothes and things like that. It's more, it's in food and things like that. Because I think the organizations that are supporting the homeless, to my understanding, and I could be corrected too, is that have it under control. We don't need people to come there and start dumping it. And because I think some of that was overwhelming last time at the Wall of Forgotten Natives. There's just too much stuff being brought in and the wrong stuff.
That's it exactly. And a lot of it was an outpouring of generosity and that's
right.
an asset, but things that were not useful to the camp residents, things that were maybe old and unusable just started showing up. And through the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, our organizations directed resources. Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, Patina Park was the mm-hmm. Executive there then. And we redirected resources to manage these contributions and donations, and it was really burdensome. And mm-hmm. most of the stuff was unusable and ended up just having to be discarded. So it's good that people are generous, but you can't just dump stuff out there. Someone yesterday, or maybe it was early today, dropped off a bunch of countertops, and I heard some sinks. And yep. those are not useful, and it means that we have to dispose of them.
Right.
I mean, so, I mean, to your point, there are organizations that are engaged, so I would encourage people to either learn or figure out where they can take contributions. There's a Facebook page, I think it's Wall of Forgotten Natives 2020, that mm-hmm. has some of that information. And to the point that there isn't a coordinated systemic response. There should be somebody who everybody understands where that place is to connect that can manage the donations, the contributions, and so they don't become a burden, and so they are useful. But we don't have that yet.
Okay.
We as a culture, we as a state, city, county, haven't invested in building that system out yet and having those points of accountability in place.
Well, sadly, the fact remains that the homeless crisis has not dissipated in any way.
It's gotten worse. It's gotten worse.
Yeah. And so what we can do as a community is pray for our relatives that are there and keep our eyes open on ways to support the workers that are working diligently with our relatives.
Yep, that's it exactly.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for being on Native Roots Radio. It's always a pleasure, and it's not on a good sign tonight, but I'm glad that there's people like you, Mike Gozzi, Jace, Autumn Dilley, and all the rest of the people that are boots on the ground really, really taking care of our people and also keeping an eye on for those predators that are always showing up.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, that security part is huge, and AIM has stepped forward, and we're asking, you know, our partners who do have law enforcement, you know, city MPD, Minneapolis Police, county sheriffs, state troopers, how they can help keep our relatives safe without being a heavy uniformed presence. That safety piece is so key, Robert.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully you're talking to our friend, Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson, because I know he's got a big heart.
He's got a big heart, and he has been very responsive.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on, and we're gonna keep in touch and have updates on how our allies and our Native brothers and sisters can help support the work that's happening in Minneapolis right now and all across the Twin Cities, really.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. Thanks for having me. It's always good to raise awareness of these issues. Omigwetch.
Pinigigi. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awakened. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Each week we have a great update from House Representative
How Mataki up, Mary Kunesh. This Pody. Is State Representative Mary listen. Kunesh, candidate for Senate in District 41B. I want to wish you all a nice long weekend. It is September 4th, and it is also Labor Day weekend. We celebrate Labor Day the first Monday of every September, and this is the weekend that we celebrate it. Most of us, of course, will not be going to barbecues or taking that final summer trip with the family before school starts or going up north to a powwow or to see our family across the border in our neighboring states. I'm hoping that everybody still is being very careful in quarantining during this COVID-19 pandemic. The numbers are up. The numbers are climbing. We've had, you know, over 50 folks coming back from Sturgis who have been diagnosed with the COVID virus. And so when you think about going to visit your family, you've missed them, you can't wait for a hug, maybe think twice or more about if you might be bringing that virus to them or if you might pick it up from them and thus continue the spread of it. So please be careful. Please be careful and wear your masks, wash your hands, try to stay that 6-foot distance and not gather into large groups over the holiday. We are starting school on Tuesday, at least I am. I know some schools have already begun, but you know, we've got Monday, and Monday is Labor Day. And if you don't know the history behind Labor Day, we have a lot to thank our labor brothers and sisters for the work accomplishments that we might have right now. We get weekends off. Most of us get overtime pay of some sort. We have a 5-day work week. All of these things we can organize, we can unionize, we can negotiate for a fair wage and fair living conditions, safe living conditions at our work. And we owe this all to the labor unions over history and the advocacy of our union brothers and sisters. They have put up a big hard fight over the decades and decades, all the way back to the 1800s. If you remember hearing about the mill girls in Lowell, Massachusetts, and the dress shop that was destroyed in the Great Chicago Fire, and so many of the young girls were burned up in the female shirtwaist fire and strike in the early 1900s. And so we really do owe a lot to our unions and our hardworking brothers and sisters, as well as the immigrants who made it possible as well. So I wish you all a happy, restful day on Monday, which is Labor Day. And then the next day, we start school, at least I do. I'm a library media specialist in Robbinsdale. And while we won't be looking, we won't be having our students back in the school, I do look forward to working with them and with their families as we start off this distance learning year. And I hope that at least a good portion of our students will learn something good and something that they can build on over the next years. And we'll just have to wait and see how this whole pandemic starts. But school for a lot of Native folks over the past, you know, generations has been kind of a dirty word. It's a scary topic for a lot of families who were once separated due to government boarding schools. And it's always such a hard topic to talk about because of the struggle and the destruction of families. When our students or when our ancestors, even our, you know, there are folks that are still victims of forced boarding school that are alive and will tell you about how those brothers and sisters were separated from their family and sent far, far away to boarding schools. I think the first one that was opened is in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, back in the late 1800s. And it was an industrial school that was government-backed. It was an institution that forcibly separated our Native American children from their parents. And I say forcibly because they were taken by force. They families were threatened not to receive their allotments or the food that had been promised. So in essence, some of these children were used as pawns in access to the lands again. And Carlisle, we know, was not a lovely place. It was not the kind of country club boarding school that white kids went to over the years. I have two older great uncles that were sent out to Carlisle, and I know there are records of how at least one of them tried to escape a number of times. And our family story is that they were not allowed to return back to the Standing Rock Reservation until after a very tragic event happened. My great uncle had jumped off a moving train as he was trying to escape and run away back to the reservation in South Dakota, fell off and had his leg cut off. And, you know, that was the sort of thing that happened more often than not. I read something not too long ago that when the Carlisle boarding school opened up, between the time that it opened in 1879 and closed again in 1918, there were over 200 burial plots in that cemetery. And there probably are even more than that. That's what they can allot. And the real reason for those boarding schools were to force assimilation for the Native Americans to become white, like their white Anglo-Americans who had taken over the land. And in 1887, the Dawes Act, it was all part of a plan to get the lands again and again and again. And the Dawes Act in 1887 reallotted that Native American land. And then that was in 1887. And another thing that they did to ensure that the natives were assimilating, there was a haircut order. The Bureau of Indian Affairs in 1902 issued a haircut order, and that was specifically stated that the men with long hair couldn't receive rations. And so, again, they used the promises that they had made over and over. And when I say they, we talk about the United States government. You know, they made many promises, many treaties, many offers, and we know that they never kept them. And at those boarding schools, the staff forced the students to cut their hair and use new American or Anglo colonizer names. They forbid the children from speaking their native language and observing their religious or their cultural practices. And when they removed them from their homes, we know that those schools disrupted the students' relationships with their families and other members of the tribe. That's what they were meant to be. And then once they return home, so many of those kids struggle to relate to their families after being taught that it was wrong to speak their language or practice their religion. And so for some, they turn to self-medication through liquor and drugs, and our others succumb to just a real depressing sort of life. And I didn't mean to move on to something so sad and heartbreaking, but when I think of school and I think of what has happened to our American Indian communities over the decades, you just can't stop thinking about that whole boarding school situation. This past week on Robert's Tuesday night symposium, we had an all-star cast of experts who work in the field of ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Act. And that, again, was one of those things that the federal government put in place to support or to prevent or to end the harmful, irreparable harm that is done to our families by taking the children. And historically, those children were often removed for very minor thoughts or ideas. And it just, again, was a way to devastate our Indigenous community. We were talking about on the Tuesday night conversation about a podcast that I would suggest you all listen to. It's called Finding Cleo, Missing and Murdered Finding Cleo. And it comes out of the Canadian broadcast system, Finding Cleo. And it's about a young girl and her brothers and sisters that were taken by welfare workers in the 1970s. Some of them were adopted into the U.S. These kids were from Canada. The family was from Canada. They knew that their sister was missing, but they didn't know the facts of the matter. They had some kind of ideas, but really did not have the full effect, the full understanding of what happened to their sister. And so that young family were separated by what was known as the 60s scoop, where officials would just walk into a Native home and literally just pull the kids right out the door and into the foster and adoption agencies, and many never were to be seen again by their family or to be connected to their family. So in this day and age when we are working so hard to stay healthy, we're working so hard to educate ourselves and our children to find safe housing and have the kind of healthcare that we all deserve and should have. Let's think about how hard our families worked to persevere over the last hundreds of years, and look at your family over this weekend, this Labor Day weekend. Working isn't always fun, but we do it because we know it's important to sustain our families, and that's why we do it. So I think my time is way up, but I will wish you a happy weekend, and everybody take care.